road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Like a band of gypsies, we go down.
Welcome to 222 Paranormal Podcast, a special edition. We are on the road again. On today's show, we have flaming disappearing rabbits, ghosts. We have Bigfoot. Bigfoot. We saw Bigfoot, folks. Well, we kind of saw Bigfoot, but anyhow, on today's show, we are on the road heading home from an awesome night of investigations at the Shanley Hotel in Napa Neck, New York. And we had a good time. What did you think, Jen?
First of all, I just want to say this is going to be, we got no rabbit hole show. So we're just going to go off in some strange directions, but you're going to love it. So in general, it was a great weekend. We put, so far, 1,071 miles on the car.
Yes, rolling down the highway. Down the highway. Yeah. Hey, and guess what mile mark we're at?
What?
222.
Shut the front door.
It is shut, see? But yeah, hey, mile marker 222. Just outside Cleveland, Ohio, heading home.
What are you, like a 70s game show host or something?
Hey, hey! But yeah, what a fun trip. We had a blast.
Okay, first of all, Joseph, I want to know what in the world is going on, because you packed twice, maybe three times as much stuff as I did. I actually packed, like, I only took three pairs of shoes this time. You'd be very proud of me.
Yeah, I mean, I overpacked again. I always do. You know, it's all my makeup. Yeah, so, yeah, we, cool thing that we did, when we got into Scranton, we went in and went downtown, checked it out and everything. But we ended up at the Houdini Museum.
So, Joe and I always like to go someplace. Anytime that we get into a new town, we definitely want to try to find like some place cool to investigate, or maybe take the haunted tour of the city, just so we get the feel of it and see what's out there. And, you know, we like to support the local haunted community. So we get there and, you know, we find those little flyers you find in the hotel rooms or in the lobby of the hotel. And we see one for this haunted tour, and it was like, you know, they do a seance and all this, so we were like, okay, cool, we'll try it. Sold out, totally sold out. She's like, you have to book that months in advance. And I'm like, well, we just came in on the fly and we're just trying to find something to do. She goes, well, we have two tickets available for tonight's show at the Houdini Museum. I'm like, sweet, because, you know, I've always thought he was fascinating and watched magic shows.
Yeah, and a lot of people nowadays don't know about him, but he was an awesome magician and escape artist. But yeah, when you told me that they had two tickets available for that, I'm like, let's go. And I did not realize how much fun it would actually be. We got there and we walked in and we were there were three people there. There was us two and one other guy waiting for the show. And the gentleman that was running the show, he was like, there was a tour bus here, and we're thinking, good, because we don't want to be the only people there.
So we get there, and it kind of looks like a storefront, but it also looks like a old clapboard house. And we go in, and we try to find the parking, and it's really not in the best of neighborhoods, and it's not even in the downtown. We just were kind of stumbled upon it. So we get there, we park in the back, we go in, and it's like this old magic museum, like everything magic you can think of. Old posters, you know, the canvas circus type posters, mirrors on the wall, memorabilia, red velvet drapes, gold, you know, cords. It's just everything you would expect of like an antique magic shop. So we go in, then they welcome us and they were great. Not realizing who these people were until the after the show, which is kind of interesting in its own right. So we go in and we pay our fee and sit down, and there's probably what, Joe, 30, 35, maybe 50 chairs in front of the small stage.
Yes.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for that comment. That insightful comment. So we go in and we sit in the front row, of course, because, you know, we just don't want to miss anything. And the real reason that I, you know, wanted to sit in the front row, because when I talked to the lady on the phone and I was booking our tickets, or, you know, making reservation for tickets, she's like, well, you know, we do live acts, so we have dogs and ducks and birds and a rabbit. And I was like, okay, well, I want to be in the front row because I want to see the freaking rabbit. Because I love rabbits. And this is the No Rabbit Rabbit Hole show. So, anyways, that's a whole nother rabbit hole. And so we go and we sit down. And then the other guy that had came in, I overheard the gentleman who looked like an old-time barker. He was bald, no eyebrows, blue eyes, kind of jetty teeth. He had a bowler hat on, a white shirt, black vest. So he just looked like the old-time ragtime, you know, come on down, folks, type burlesque barker.
Like circus performer. I can't think of the name of it either. The maestro. The maestro. It looks like a maestro, but the dude was so cool.
Yeah, well, it was so interesting. So we get in there, and I overheard him and this other guy having this conversation that the guy was a truck driver, but he was also a magician. And it was interesting because, Joe, did you take a look at me? He just looked like a Monty Python character. He had long brown hair. He had this, just that face that looked like an English actor, comedian from the 70s face. I don't know. He looked familiar. And he had a fanny pack on, which was kind of cool. Anyways, and jorts. But so we went in and we sat down, and then they were fussing. It was just this lady and the man who run the place, and they were just scurrying about and rushing around, and we were just kind of checking out all the memorabilia, and it's just all haphazard, slapped up on the walls everywhere, and just in no particular order, but there was just so much of it. Where could you put it all, you know? So we get in there and we take our seats, and then this busload of ladies come in. Like, what, how many?
Oh, there had to be 30 or 40. But they're, and the funny thing was, they were all school teachers and from the local area, I guess. I mean, but yeah, I was afraid that being sitting in the front row that I'd be the guinea pig, but luckily I wasn't. Because, you know, I'm not into that. I can't. I'm behind the scenes. I have a face for radio. And but, yeah, that was cool. But the neat thing about it is they did the show and everything, and we did not realize that we were in the presence of a legend.
We get in there, and before the show, they show you a little videotape of some history of Harry Houdini, of who he was and why he was so famous, and his great accomplishments in magic. So we're in there, and then they play, after that, they played a video of this lady who was presenting on stage. She was the hostess. You know, this gentleman, I think his name was Dick. I can't remember his last name. And we get up there, and we're watching, and she comes out, and to find out, she is the first lady of magic. So back in probably the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, she was doing magic tricks when it wasn't cool for women to be a magic. She was right up there with the big boys, like the David Copperfields and the Doug Hennings and, you know, all of those old school, well, I don't want to say old school, but the people that came the next wave of magic after, you know, Harry Houdini had passed on.
Yeah, the living legends that everybody sees on TV. And her name was Dorothy Dietrich. Looking her up, she is everywhere. I looked her up online. I'm like, oh, wow, she is the big time, you know? And she was the only woman that actually did the bullet catch trick, where they take a bullet, put it, or, you know, load a rifle with a bullet, shoot it at her, and she catches the bullet in her teeth. She's the only woman to ever do that, which is just amazing. She's been doing stuff for a long, long time. Just like I said, she's a living legend. And here she is, right, doing an intimate show for us. And then after the show, we got a chance to actually hang out and talk to her for, what, about an hour?
Yeah, so, you know, she does this, the magic show, and then the other gentleman who was there, he did, you know, his spiel, and it was great. It was so entertaining, and they brought people up on the stage to help do magic, and, you know, and these people are not coordinated, and it was just really fun. There was a bunny rabbit. She did do a rabbit, pull the rabbit out of a box or something, which I was, like, so happy about. I'm like, ah, it was the cutest rabbit ever. But just seriously, though, we did not realize that this little theater in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which, you know, back in, I don't even think it was the burlesque days, but that coming of age time where, you know, theater and, you know, like the Rat Pack type entertainment from probably, you know, the early 1900s to maybe the 50s, 60s, you know, Scranton was a huge stopover. If they said, if you can make it in Scranton, you can make it anywhere, because the Scranton audiences, and this is according to, you know, what Dorothy was telling us, or the gentleman that was with Dorothy, that the audiences in Scranton were very, very, what's the word for it, Joe?
Just tough.
Yeah, tough on the audiences. They, you know, not easily amused. So if you could make it in Scranton, you can make it anywhere. So Houdini had done shows in Scranton and just amazed the audiences with what he could come, you know, he could perform in front of them. You know, he wasn't, I don't think, so much an illusionist. I thought they just, you know, he was an escape artist.
Yeah, he was an escape artist, and that's what he was known for. But the handcuffs and everything, and it's cool because they have a lot of the memorabilia that he owned right there in the museum in Scranton. I mean, who would know? Who would ever know that? And we got a chance, like I said, to sit or stand in the back room there and talk to Dorothy, and it was awesome, man. Like, I was just sitting there in awe listening to her stories, because we don't think of that stuff. We're more of the paranormal stuff, and she's more of the magic stuff.
So one thing that I thought was really interesting that she said, Joe, and, you know, tell me if I'm got this right, but she was saying that he, okay, first of all, he was not born in this country. He emigrated to this country. His real name was Eric Weiss. He had seen another magician who, his last name was Houdin, and he wanted to be like him. He wanted to be better than him. He wanted to be known as the best magician ever. An escape artist, too. So he changed his name to Houdini, and then later on added the Harry. But everybody always thought he was American, but he wasn't. He later on, I think he became American citizen. But he was very much wanting to always have his name in the papers. So there was one story that Houdini was such a publicity hound that there was a circus train wreck near where he was staying. And when it happened, he literally ran out of his hotel, ran down to the accident site, laid down on the ground, and before the press even got there. You know, back in the day, the press was just the newspaper, because we didn't have any other, you know, form of media other than maybe some radio. But he laid down next to the dead bodies and then stood up once the press got there so he could have the headline that Houdini escaped death.
Yeah, can you believe that? I mean, that's showmanship there. But yeah, if you guys get a chance, look up Dorothy Dietrich and the Houdini Museum. We'll throw it in the show notes. And if you're in Scranton, man, I'm telling you, that is a show to go to. And it's just awesome. I mean, I keep saying I'm blown away, right? But it was so cool. I mean, it's like us. We didn't go to a bingo hall. We went to the show. Yeah, and then, so the next morning we got on the road, and I know this is a paranormal show, and you guys want to hear about the paranormal, but hey, This is our invisible rabbit. No rabbit, rabbit hole show. So, yeah, we're going down rabbit holes through this whole show. And so we get on the road and we're going along. We're like, also we see a sign for Paws and Claws Animal Park. And we're like, what the heck is that? Let's find out. So we go there and it turns out way back off the beaten trail down this windy road.
Windy road through New York. I mean, just, we didn't even know where we were going. Were we in New York or were we in Pennsylvania? I don't remember.
I don't remember. No. Yeah, I think we were still in Pennsylvania at the time. But so we pull up and it's this little like reserve and they had everything. They had giraffes. They had all kinds of cats. They had lions. They had monkeys. They had snakes. They had llamas.
Oh, and don't forget, they had sloth and snow leopards, capuchin monkeys. They had marmosets, lemurs.
Camel.
Oh, yeah. A very frothy camel. He apparently was trying to woo some ladies. It's that time of year, you know. So he's, like, engorging his throat or something and making these funny noises and stomping back and forth and drooling. Apparently that's his, you know, mating call.
Well, drooling is sexy. So anyhow, we did that and we left. And on the way out, we see a sign for a garage sale. So we pull into the garage sale and it's this tiny little thing in a trailer court. And we pull in and Jen, you want to tell them what we found?
Okay, so there's like, what, four tables? And we're expecting like this big, huge community yard sale. The signs were all over. And we go back in this like windy wood area. Now, the area that we're in is so sporadically populated that it was just very odd. So we pull back and we go through this trailer park. It's up on hills and down and couldn't find it. Finally find this little like soccer field something they had. We start walking through and there's just junk. I mean, like junk you won't give to your grandma. So we get in there and there's a rabbit cage, a brand new rabbit cage. And I was like, you know, you guys know that I lost my rabbit a couple years ago. Rest in peace, booby. But so I am looking at it and the lady's like, oh, it's for my ferrets and I don't have them anymore. I'm like, oh, okay. And it had $15 sticker on it. And she goes, you can have it for $10. I'm like, sweet, I'll take it. We had to shove this thing in the back seat of my car. So the car is complete. We're in my Volkswagen. Completely packed to the gills with all of our equipment, our luggage, our snacks, which take up half the car. And then this giant rabbit cage.
Yeah, I mean, we got all our luggage and everything's in the trunk. And here's this big rabbit cage. But that's how we roll, folks. That's why it is the no rabbit rabbit hole show. But, okay, so let's get to the paranormal aspects of the show. So we're driving through New York, and as we're driving right now back home, we are passing a truck, and the trailer number on the truck, swear to God, is 222. It's 222. See? I'm telling you.
And tell everybody what happened on the way here with 222.
Yeah, on the way here, that's what we keep seeing, 222s. The trailer, and we literally passed this trailer, and in huge numbers on the back of the trailer was 222. And we're all honking, we're like, hey, yeah, 222. And the guy is looking at us like, what did I do? Why are you honking at me? So we had our 222 sightings. So anyhow, I was looking at the woods, because where we're driving through New York, it is mountains and nothing but trees. And I'm looking, I'm like, you know what? Now I understand why Bigfoot has not been seen. I mean, you look at these woods, and there's no way that people have ever been in these woods. I mean, so it's so easy for a Bigfoot to live in there.
You know what's interesting, Joe, is like, until you drive across the United States and you get on the byways and the highways, you cannot understand how vastly wooded and mountainous, you know, the United States is, from like Ohio to Pennsylvania into New York. I mean, it is I mean, there's just forests and forests and forests. Thickly, densely populated forests. And on the sides of mountains, there's no way that there's not something in those that we haven't discovered.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, no, Bigfoots can't exist. We don't see them anywhere. But you look at these woods and, hey, I believe that Bigfoot is in those woods. And they didn't see any signs that said Bigfoot crossing or anything like that. But, I mean, you think about it, okay? There are parts of the United States where I don't think people have ever been. And looking at these hills, it's like, why would people go up there to begin with? So, yeah, that's why I firmly believe that Bigfoot is in those woods. And we all know that Pennsylvania and the New York area is so densely populated that a lot of people say it's the number one area for Bigfoots.
Yeah, if you look at a map of Bigfoot research, you will see that Pennsylvania and Ohio have the most densely, you know, reported sightings of Bigfoots. So, you know, what do you think a Bigfoot is, Joe?
I honestly don't know. I mean, you know, they say it's the great ape and all that, but I think it's just an offshoot. You know, maybe like the Neanderthals, maybe. You know, it's hard to say. I mean, they all call them great apes. Like the Native Americans used to call them the wild men. And there were other things like the skunk apes. There's so many different names of them.
What another interesting thing is that every culture has this creature. I mean, if you go back in the hieroglyphics, or, you know, any kind of cave drawings or Native American folklore, you find that, you know, some mention of a large bipedal beast in their, you know, in their culture, in their art, or in their, what do you call it, in their legends.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's even cave drawings. And there's no doubt that, you know, you think, well, the cavemen weren't that sophisticated, so their cave drawings aren't that great. But to be honest with you, I don't think that. I think that if the person that's drawing on the caves is the person that was chosen to draw on the caves, he's got to be like the best artist they have. And for him to draw this ape-looking man back then, and you know, you'll get some people, oh, they were just gorillas and that. It's like, no, not in South Dakota. You know, I mean, I believe in Bigfoot. And looking at, next time you guys drive anywhere, take a look and look at the woods and think, it's so possible that there is a Bigfoot.
Well, you know, they thought up until probably, 200 to maybe 150 to 100 years ago, I'm not sure exact number, that the great apes didn't even exist. They thought it was legend. Until, you know, people start exploring other continents and getting into Africa and noticing or, you know, viewing these things.
Yeah, because they never even found bones of the great apes until few years ago, but just probably 100 years ago or so. They never even found bones of the apes. And those are things that we know exist. So, I mean, it's so obvious. And, you know, I can go on and say, well, show us the evidence. And that's why what I did believe, but now that we're doing more of this research and meeting these people that show us their videos on their cameras or show us their footprints or, you know, just listening to their stories and stuff, there is a lot more evidence out there for Bigfoot than what people actually know of.
And who's to say that the evidence isn't out there but somebody sequestered it? The government, a.k.a. You know, who's to say that they don't want mass panic and that they have silenced or destroyed any type of evidence? I mean, even with UFOs, look at, you know, what we're dealing with, the, you know, denial every time that there's a UFO. It didn't happen. It was a weather balloon.
Exactly. I know. But anyhow, so keeping on with the paranormal part of this rabbit hole show, we stopped at a gas station just before we got to Napanac, New York. We're like, let's stop, top off. We don't know how far we got to go yet. So we topped off, and the guy saw our shirts, and he's like, ooh, paranormal. I love that stuff. So we got to meet another person. Oh, which reminds me, I didn't even mention when we were at the Paws and Claws, the guy, the gemstone dude, he saw our shirts and he was the same way. He's like, man, I love paranormal, you know, how can I listen to you guys? And we told him that. And I was thinking, you know, that's one thing about it, the paranormal, is a lot of people don't come out and talk about it because they don't want to be ridiculed. But once you start talking to these people, once you start talking to people, they start telling their stories, and it's awesome.
Well, I think, you know, for so long, people were, had to keep that thing kind of silent. If you were into something that wasn't mainstream or wasn't popular, you were shunned. But now it's so open there with, you know, with the invention of YouTube and the internet, there's so much evidence out there that how can you deny something that you clearly can research and see? I mean, yes, there are fake, don't get me wrong, I totally believe that people fake evidence and put it on YouTube, but you know, there's some things you can't explain. Look at the Gettysburg ghost video that went around that we talked about on our Gettysburg show. I mean, you just can't deny that wasn't spirits.
Oh, I know. I mean, that was so cool. We talk about it a few times, but all right, so let's get on to our investigation. We finally made it to the Shanley Hotel. One of the most important parts, folks, of any paranormal investigation is the snacks. So we ended up, we went to Walmart, folks. Yes, hey, Rodney, we went to Walmart. I know you're listening, Rodney. We went to Walmart. And this Walmart had to be the smallest Walmart I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, my gosh. It was like a baby Walmart, and I wanted to wrap it up and put it in a blanket.
Yeah. So we walk in, and we get our snacks and all that, and we head over to the Shanley Hotel, and we pull up. And it's so cool because you can definitely tell that it's part of an old little town. It's like Napanac grew up around this town. And the buildings around it are super cool. And you can just get, you walk up to this place and you get the vibe of it being haunted. Just the look of the other buildings around it and the look of it, the building itself. And it's kind of, I don't want to say intimidating, but it's kind of, you get that feeling when you walk up because you've seen it on TV. You've seen it in the articles and on YouTube and all them places. But I know that when we found out that we were going to do the investigation, I kind of didn't really look it up online. I didn't want to get, you know, like preempted or whatever you say.
Yeah, we just wanted to go in and investigate and be unbiased. And instead of saying, okay, such and such happens in this particular room, and we go in there expecting it to happen. We just wanted to go in with an open mind and just try to feel what we could feel and see what we could see and hear what we could hear. And it was interesting when you first pull up. It is very intimidating. It is a huge, I mean, it is old to a hotel. I mean, it's just parts of it, it's falling apart. But you walk in, and what was your first, like, impression? Like, first word comes to mind when you walked in, Joe?
When we actually walked into the place, the first thing I thought of was the stairway. Because it's, you know, you walk in, that's the first thing you see. But that was really cool. I mean, just the, you know, I love architecture. So when you walk in, you got the architecture there. And we walked in with the group. We all met, you know, and had lunch before, which, by the way, the lunch was awesome. We stopped at an Italian restaurant, which, oh my God, it was so good. But yeah, we all walked in together, and the median that was with us, she right away said, there's somebody standing next to the stairway. I see someone standing next to the stairway. So we didn't even get our equipment set up or nothing. and we were getting stuff, folks. But I'm not going to tell you what we got because we want to go over all of our evidence that we gathered. But I tell you, I got some good stuff. I'm not going to lie. The place is really cool. But yeah, we'll let you know. We're going to get together with the group that we went with, which was Al Luna's group from Toledo here. And he invited us along. We were like, yeah, we'll go. Heck yeah. That was fun. And I'm thinking, it's a Shanley. I'm not going to say no. You know, I'm not going to say no. So we'll let you know. We'll go over all our evidence and let you know what we got.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that future show where we do our reveal of our total investigation. But I just want to go back. I have to hop back into the rabbit hole for a second. I want to give a shout out to the restaurant Ariana's in Ellensdale. What was that town, Joe? Ellensburg or Ellensdale? Ellens something, New York. It was the best Italian. It was just this like little pizza parlor. You wouldn't even think it was like a restaurant. It was just more like a pizza shop on the corner. And they accommodated us, all of us, into this little room. And it was the best Italian food I have ever had. It was so good. And we had a great waitress. She was amazing. She took care of all of us at once. And I forget her name, but she was amazing. I hope she's listening.
Yeah, she was cool. And I don't think she wrote anything down. I didn't see her write anything down. You got an order for 25 people all ordering different things. But, yeah, she was awesome. And I hope she's listening because listen to all of our shows. I'm hypnotizing her right now. Listen to all of our shows. So, yeah. But the investigation, like I said, I don't want to really go into it much because the fact that we haven't gone over all of our evidence. But I had some great conversations with the obelisk. So that's a little sneak peek there, folks. I had a great conversation with the obelisk. But, yeah. So, anyhow, a few other things. If you're in the area and you like museums, now this is, I guess this would be paranormal because it's so weird. But there are a bunch of museums in the area. There's the Zippo Case Museum. Yeah. Lucy and Desi Arnaz Museum. I don't know why. But there's also the Wood Carving and Knife Museum. I bet that's exciting.
And don't forget the Fly Fishing Museum we saw.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one, the Fly Fishing Museum. And our investigation wrapped up bright and early in the morning at 3 o'clock. We finished up at 3 in the morning. We headed off to our own bedrooms. And I think I slept in the loudest bed in the world. You sit on this thing. And it was like all these crackling noises and everything.
And I was in like this little tiny kid's bed. Like everybody, there's like rooms, you know, it's an old hotel. So there's like 25 rooms, but not every one of them had a bed. So there was one big room that had what, like 7 beds. And so like everybody's just crashing out wherever they could. And man, oh man, Joe, I am so tired today. I think being tired and driving is just as dangerous as drunk driving. I don't recommend it, but tell everybody what time. Okay, so what time did we actually get to sleep?
Well, I don't know. I think I hit the pillow at 4 o'clock and was out by 4:01. But and then we were bright and early. I don't know what time you got up, but I was up at like 6.
Well, I couldn't sleep. I was having the worst dreams. It was the most uncomfortable bed I've ever slept in. The pillow was flat. I just could not get comfortable. Of course, I was so exhausted. You know how you're so overtired you can't sleep? It was like that. So we were up, probably at like 6 o'clock and packed up our stuff and was at the gas station by like 7:30 and on the road.
Yeah, on the road, home. And so we got, what, maybe 2.5 hours sleep? I don't know. But that's how we roll, folks. And instead of going and getting breakfast, we went to the casino because that's how we roll. But anyhow, thanks for listening to our No Rabbit Rabbit Hole show. And before we let you go, I want to remind you, next weekend, this is it, folks. This is the last week, and there's a couple of tickets left. So get your tickets to the private ghost hunt with us. 222 Paranormal Podcast host Jen and Joe at the world-famous, very haunted Gill House. Get up on our Facebook events page. Click on the link. All the prices are up there. The dates are up there. What to bring, what not to bring. All that good stuff. So get up there and check us out.
So if you want a ticket, please go to www.brownpapertickets.com and type in 222 Paranormal. The info is also located there. But yeah, definitely get on, get your tickets. We only have a couple. It's going to be a limited engagement. So, you know, you don't have a ton of people showing up and then you can't investigate because it's so loud. So it's a very small group that we're doing. It's going to be great. If you have not been to the Gill House in Galion, Ohio. Oh my gosh. I say that wrong every time. But Galion, Ohio. Look up our show on the Gill House. It's called the Gill House Show. That's Rabbit Hole.
Rabbit Hole Show. But hey, thanks a lot, folks. Stay tuned next week. We got an awesome show lined up for you next week. And until then, we'll leave you guys off with Outlaw Hell Ride number 9 by Dead in 5. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Yeah!